بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. There was a very notable Buzurg in Mangalore, Maulana Arham Ilahi. This beat to Hazrat Maulana Muhammad Yaqub Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. For some reason, some of the townspeople did not agree with him. In every town, every community will have some that will be supporting and some that will be against. جَعَلْنَا لِكُلِّ نَبِيٍ أَدُوًا. When every Nabi had an opposition, so those that come to be the ears of the Nabi, they will also have some support and they will have some opposition. Hazrat Ji Rahmatullah is explaining one incident. One buzurg, wished to sell his slave girl. So he felt that there is another buzurg in this town and perhaps I should sell this girl to him, because he seems to be quite wealthy and he will perhaps purchase her. So he went up to that buzurg, offered his slave girl. That buzurg, before offering the girl says, no, don't sell me to that buzurg. Why? You will have the blessings of a pious company, pious individual. When it's a pious person, then he won't hurt you. And apart from not him not hurting you, you will be in his association, so you get the barakat as well. So she says, no, I don't think he's a buzurg. So he says, but how can you say that? How can you make an allegation when the whole world is saying that he's a pious person, he's a buzurg, and you say that, no, he's not a buzurg? So she says, you see, up till now we have witnessed that every buzurg has some opposition. But when we look at this buzurg here, then everybody is only praising him. There's nobody that is condemning him, running him down, nobody that is speaking ill of him. Everybody is speaking highly of him, everybody is praising him. So there's nobody that is condemning him, nobody that is running him down. So he can't be a buzurg. He says, all right, so what we will do, we will sell you to him, because he needs a slave girl, but with khiyar shart, with an option, to cancel the sale after 3 days. If the seller wishes to cancel, then he can cancel it within 3 days. Meanwhile, you go up to him and you see if he's not agreeable, he doesn't seem to be the right person, then we'll cancel the sale, we'll revoke you. So she says, all right, as long as there is a option in place, then I don't mind going up to him. Khiyar shart. Like this incident of this watch. Mawlana Sahan Puri Sahib Rahmatullahi asks Mawlana Thanvi Rahmatullahi that you asked me to revoke or to cancel the sale, then I can't do it. How can I do it? See? Actually, Mawlana Sahan Puri Sahib Rahmatullahi had asked him to sell him the watch. See, he had received the gift and Mawlana Sahan Puri asked to sell him if it's not of his need, not something that he's going to be using. And this is nothing strange with Mawlana Thanvi Rahmatullahi, because it was Mawlana Thanvi Rahmatullahi's routine that every now and then, whatever was extra in his possession, he would send it to the madrasa to be sold. He would send gifts or something, and this is not within his needs. When it's not within his needs, then he will take it, sell it to the madrasa, and the madrasa would sell it, he would get the cash. So because this was a practice already in place, someone asked him, alright, if this is something more than your need, then sell it to me. So Mulana had sold it, they had found out more or less what's the price, what's the going price for this watch here, and the watch was sold. But in the meanwhile, after the watch got sold, the person that gave the gift to Thanvi Rahmatullahi felt upset. He didn't feel very comfortable. That why is this gift sold? Why is Thanvi not using it himself? He felt a little bit hurt about the whole thing. If we give something to some buzurg or some person, then we want him to use it. And if he didn't use it then he'll feel a little bit uncomfortable. Why is he not using it? He must use it himself personally, right? So that can happen. In the Azwaja Mutaharat also once something similar had happened. That the Sahaba Kiram, they had known that Rasulullah Paksam takes a greater liking for Aisha radiallahu anha. And in these matters, the Shariat also doesn't hold you responsible. We have a greater liking for a certain person as long as you are just in every other aspect, in gifts, in time, in sharing your wealth, etc. You are equal in that respect. But now love is something that is not in your control. One person takes more to rice and he takes less to bread, for example. So he's not going to be answerable that why are you discriminating? He's not going to be answerable to Allah Ta'ala. That's a personal choice. Someone prefers coffee to tea and others prefer tea to coffee. So you're not going to be answerable for that why are you discriminating? Why are you not drinking this? Why are you drinking that? That's a personal choice. As long as you're not hurting anybody. In your dealings, you're not hurting that person, you're not suppressing his rights, then it's not a guna, it's not a sin. So the Sahaba-i-Kiram, they would see that Rasul-e-Pasim had a greater liking for Aisha radiya anha. So when Nabi Sallam had a greater liking for Aisha radiya anha, they would send the gift in Aisha radiya anha's turn. Because Rasul Sallam would be even in a more joyous state. He's in a more joyous state than he was in the food then. In the meanwhile, the other Azwaja Mutaharat, they were upset about the whole thing. And they sent Hazrat Salima radiallahu anha to speak on their behalf. Let's see, these gifts, people are sending gifts, and the gifts are being sent in Aisha's turn. So if they have to send the gifts, then they must send the gifts equally. You know, whoever's turn it is, they must send the gift. They mustn't wait for Aisha radiallahu's turn and then pass on the gifts. But whenever they got a gift, in whoever's day it may be, they must pass on the gift. Now what is this? That they only pass it on Hazrat Aisha's turn. They must just pass it on, immaterial. So, Rasulullah Paksa Sam cautioned her, Salima, La tu'udhini fi Aisha, that don't trouble me with respect to Hazrat Aisha radiya anha. Now, that was from Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, so she became very apprehensive. Straight away she said, I ask refuge from the wrath of Allah Ta'ala and His Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam that it never descends upon me. Anyway, she went back. Now they went and said her Fatima radiallahu anha to represent them. That she must now present the whole thing to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So Fatima radiallahu anha came in. So Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam told Fatima radiallahu anha, don't you see, this is more or less the words, that she is the beloved of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. This answer was enough for Fatima. She was a very understanding woman. She is the beloved of your father, when she is the beloved of your father, if this happens, then you shouldn't take exception to it. Hazrat Fatima returned. They wanted Hazrat Aisha, Hazrat Fatima to come again and present the whole case again. So Fatima says, no, no, I understood the whole case, I'm not going to get in between here. See? Then Zainab Radiyallahu Anha, she became the representative and she came in. Because she was like treated as the equal of Hazrat Aisha Radiyallahu Anha. If Aisha was beloved, Zainab was also very, very beloved, you see, amongst Azwaj Mutahharat. And she would say, you know, that, see, your people's fathers got you all married, and me, Allah Ta'ala got me married, Zawwajnaka. So Allah Ta'ala got me married from above the heavens. So I've got something that you don't have, you see. So Zainab radiallahu anha came in, and she wanted to object. So anyway, now in this third instance, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam asked Aisha to say something. Because Zainab radiallahu anha, she would speak quite freely, more freely, you see. Because of her position, when you've got a position, then apne maqam se zara kuch naaz bhi hota hai. You have a little bit of a pride about your position, and taking pride about your position, you say something. And she said something's a little bit serious, that Ya Rabbi Allah, you must be just in this respect. Now, if someone has to say, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, be just in that respect, then, you know, it's a serious fatwa that will go against you. How can you say, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, be just? If he doesn't practice justice, then who's going to practice justice? But then this was tolerated because it's a husband and a wife relationship. In a husband and a wife relationship, this type of statements are overlooked. Many a times it happens that a man becomes very serious. How can she say something to me like this, you know? Yeah. How can you say something to me like this? Now, women are a little bit crooked, so they will say something in their crookedness. If you came late, say, where you been? What you were doing? Give me the particulars, I'm going to phone up. So they speak to you like that. Right? So it's not for you to get tipped off, or to flip, or to get angry. Naturally, they have a little bit of a jealousy in them. That's women. They have a little bit of jealousy, they're a little bit possessive about their husbands. Because of their possessive nature with their husband, they will speak like that. Now, it will be a stupidity and naivety on your side that you get angered for every little thing. It's not a man for a man to get angry for every small thing. You must understand that they are like that, they will speak like that. Like how children will say, Abba, you're not fair now. No, you're taking this money, you're not taking me. Or you gave her a chocolate, you didn't give me a chocolate. So children will speak like that. Now women also, they speak like that in the presence of their husband. Now that's a stupid husband to say now, hey, you know, what you think? You are picking on my integrity, you know, making false allegations against me. What do you think about me? So that's a stupid husband. But a brilliant husband, a smart husband, he will play it out nicely. And he will overcome that hurdle. In a very gentle, respectable, easy way, he'll overcome that. So she said some firm words. So Nabi Samad asked Aisha to answer. So Aisha radiallahu anha, when she got the license from Nabi Samad to speak, now she spoke. When she spoke, Zainab just went still. Because she was very fluent in Arabic and in her own language. She was very, very fluent. Nabi Sallam also praised her, applauded her. Hiya bintu ibn Quhafa. You know who she is? She is the daughter of Abu Bakr. So Abu Bakr is so eloquent, so she must be eloquent. But by the way, there's another point that I'm just sharing with you. Aisha is one nephew came in. Some nephews of hers came in. Amongst them, perhaps it was Salim or someone's son that came in, also her nephew. So, in that, he used some word that was not eloquent. It wasn't grammatically correct. eloquent, you know, maybe the zabar zair was not right or something was incorrect. So Aisha radiallahu anha reprimanded him. What's wrong with you? How are you speaking? Anyway, she reprimanded him and thereafter she put on the dastarkhan. And when she put on the dastarkhan, he was already angry about the whole thing that she took off with me. So he engaged in namaz. To show his anger, he started his namaz. When he started his namaz, so Aisha radiallahu anha says, and how can you read namaz in the presence of food? If there is food present, then you finish, eat, and thereafter you engage in namaz. But the point that I wish to share with you here is this, that Hazrat Aisha radiallahu anha reprimanded her nephew on account of him not using the correct word. So that brings us to the point that we should inculcate Arabic, and Arabic, eloquent Arabic in the homes, right? Alright, for some reason, if you can't bring it, like in our context, that we can't bring it, right? Even an alim who's teaching Arabic 50 years in the madrasa, he can't bring it in his home. For whatever reason, he can't bring it. Then, what's the next best thing? See, because this is the highest option, this is the highest level that you bring about that language. As Aisha did the same thing, she reprimanded him. If it was just an optional thing, permissible thing, an optional thing, then Aisha wouldn't have reprimanded her nephew. If he reprimanded him, shows that this is more than optional. So then, the second best option will be what is closest to Arabic. Now in this day and time, the thing that is closest to Arabic is Urdu. There isn't a language as close to Arabic as Urdu, right? Alright. We come one degree less, we come even one step lower. But for some reason then you can't even speak Urdu in the home. Right? You can't even speak Urdu in the home for some reason. Then at least speak some of your vernacular. Gujarati or Meman or whatever else. Whatever the vernaculars you have, then speak those languages. Because those languages are closer to Arabic than English, obviously. You see, like the Meman language or the Gujarati language, right? I think I was counting one day, you know, just casually, you'll find about 50, 60 words Arabic in Gujarati. That's when I looked at it randomly. Otherwise, you'll find much more. You know, for example, you say, I'm going to my maternal aunt's place. Now, Kala is a pure Arabic word. Pure Arabic word. They say, Jalakte Sufro Bichao. You know, just spread the dastarkhan. Sufra is an Arabic word. Pure Arabic word. So, in Gujarati, there is so much of Arabic. In Urdu, there is much more. There's about 3 or 4 times more Arabic words in Urdu. So it's so closely attached. And when there is an attachment with Arabic, right, then a language comes with its culture. What we miss out, the point that we miss out, that every language comes with a culture. If you speak your vernacular, then your vernacular has got a culture. And you move away from your vernacular, then you moved out from your culture. I was explaining to someone that, see, it's a trend nowadays that if you want to host someone, then we go to a shop, right? Jimmy's, Killer Prawns, or somewhere, Spurs, or somewhere, we go there, and we entertain our guests, right? And the old day it was that you entertain the guest in your home, right? Now, I want to show you which is closer to the Sunnah, and where this thing came from. Actually, when you're entertaining and showing hospitality to your guest in a shop, what are you doing? You say, "Bhai, I don't want you to come home, you know. You're going to invade my privacy. You're going to make it very, very heavy for me." That's the word they use. They make it very heavy for us now. You're coming here, invading the privacy. So if there's going to be a child that's going to be born, what we will do, we'll take him in the cradle, bring him into the shop, and all you people must come, and then bless the child, give the gifts, whatever you want to see, have a good meal and move. After that, don't come and disturb us. Don't come and interrupt us. Now I ask you, is that in keeping with our lifestyle? It's not in keeping with our lifestyle. Our lifestyle will be, whenever that guest will come, we'll honor the guest, we'll respect him, talk about deen. Now, so many things is not in line with deeni ethos. So many things here, this type of a lifestyle. I'm not talking about the permissibility, impermissibility, haram, I'm not talking about that. But it's not in keeping with the Islamic ethos. One is, there's no warmth in it, right? Now you just took it out of the house. You sourced it out. The whole dawat, you sourced it out. Where? To the shop. So you're not showing warmth, right? Number two, a woman's place is the home. It's not for a woman to come out to a shop. If she's going to come to a shop, right, then for that occasion she has to doll up. Right? And she's going into the open, dolled up, perfumed, right? Now I ask you, this is permissible or haram? Ask any alim, is this permissible or this haram, that she's dolled up and she's perfumed and she's coming outside? Is this permissible or haram? Right. Number three, when there's going to be, the guests are going to come into the home, right? Then a home has got a homely environment. Muhabbat, understanding, you talk a little bit freely, right? And a shop doesn't have a homely environment. Because there's other people also watching, who's coming here, what they're doing, what's the occasion, and what's happening here. Others also watching all these things. Right? So it's no more a private, affair. Now it becomes for everybody. See. The same thing applies to Eid now. You want to have an Eid, a little bit of an Eid atmosphere. So initially what you used to do, and the whole family, say, if it is a mullah family, then all the mullah family will come into one central home. Whichever, perhaps was the grandfather's home, everybody will come and do the Eid and move away. I don't say that this is sunnah, right? But they do it just to keep the family tie. We will not object to it. Alhamdulillah, it's good to maintain the family tie, at least meet the old people, whatever else. But that's a homely atmosphere. Now, suddenly, they feel that, no, we can't manage it any longer, let's outsource it. Let's go to one hall now. We're going to do it in the hall. Now, I ask you, is that same atmosphere going to be experienced in the hall? It's going to be, you're cold now. And apart from being cold, what will happen is that, say, all right, this family has got 500 people, so everybody must make a contribution to this eating also. Right? 500 people, so I can't take the whole burden myself, that everybody must contribute. Everybody give 200 rand, 300 rand, so that it covers up the bill. So it's such a cold atmosphere. Now all this is coming from an English culture. You're speaking the language, you're interacting with them, you're doing business with them. Eventually you begin to behave like them. See the language, the culture, where it starts from and where it takes you to. See? The whole culture is that everybody must be for himself. You don't do for others. And our culture is that we must do for others. Our elders, our young, the one that is a little bit handicapped, the one that is a little bit backwards, then do something for him. That's our culture, right? And here now everybody must be for himself. So we take this to such a point that when the child is about 17, 18, then they throw the child out of the house. But by the same token, when that old man, when he's about 70, then he is thrown out of the house, go to the old age. I remember I was in East London. So one person is telling me, one of the guides in East London is telling me, there was one famous motor car racer at that time, some Schecter or something, Tony Schecter or something. Multi-millionaire, very, very wealthy. And he's showing me that this is an old age, so he took his mother and he put her there. So when they are aged, then you just deposit them there. They must wait there until they die. All alone, cold, alienated from human life, you just go and live there and wait for your death to come. Now that's the cold life that they lead. So in that coldness, so many virtues you are deprived of. Here you are blessed with so many virtues that your parents are your jannat. Their pleasure is the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala. Their du'as are accepted on your behalf, right? So many things you get. Now, you will have one Mother's Day, one Father's Day. One day in the year, 2 days in the year, you have seen them, but that's enough. They mustn't come too close because they'll make it too heavy in the house. And, you know, they'll keep talking and things that are not related. Old granny stories they'll talk. So they'll make it very heavy for us. So keep them out. So this is the culture that we'll go in gradually. We'll leave one thing and the second thing and the third thing until we have broken away totally from our own cultures, right? Our own culture we have broken away. Right? Now I say that this thing may seem to be very, very insignificant, very small. Right? But where it's starting from, the starting point is the language. Then the fourth wrong I'm showing you in this language story is this, that we begin to feel inferior of our own language. Right? Our own language, we feel inferior. And the language of a kuffar coming, springing up from a kafir, that language we feel, you know, that this person is very educated. I mean, see how well he speaks. So, if a person is speaking Zulu very, very fluently, do you say that he's very, very educated? Will you say that? If he's speaking Khoza very, very, very fluently, do you say he's very educated? Well, Junaid, he knows Zulu very well, so he's very educated. You will say that. You don't say that. But that education only applies, educated, literacy, and very understanding if he can speak English well. So why only English? What's so great about it? What's so great about it that you say, all right, he's very educated, he's very... A person is speaking Zulu, he's speaking very... He's very eloquent in that language. He's speaking Khoza and he's very... He's speaking Sotho and he's very, very fluent in that language. So why don't we say that? So that means we are suffering a complex. We're suffering some type of inferiority. Number four, the problem again, I say, as you move away from your culture, now, just look at it. Open your mind and talk and think about it. See, we go and do, our people, we do too many things, but the basic things, we forget it. Too many things we do. On the radio, go do this, whatever else, speak about Mandela, or he's dying, or no, he didn't die, or life support, right? But do the basic things. Forget all that things, do the basic things. Now, when you lost your language, what happened? Now, this is a case study. I'm not discriminating, I'm not running down anybody. Look at our people here, our Indians here, and compare them to the Cape Malays, right? Cape Malays are coming from either Malaysia or Indonesia. And we are coming from India or Pakistan, right? Generally, more from India, some from Pakistan, right? So this is where we're coming from, and this is where they're coming from. Now, the Cape Malay, there's hardly one person in the whole Cape Town who can speak the language. Hardly one person. They don't know their roots. They cut off their roots completely, right? As a result, they have been distanced from their deen. Unless and until the Tabligh Jamaat went. I remember in the early days, I went to Cape Town. So, you know, in the presence of the great mashayikh, like you had Imam, that Sheikh Nazir around that time, you know, 1970s. Now, a woman can come, and as though in their societies, she would be considered as a pious woman, to ask some masla or something. She doesn't have a scarf on the head, and she doesn't have a trouser. She doesn't have an ijar. But she can talk to the Sheikh, you know, as though she's a pious girl. So what happens? She's moved away from her culture, she lost her language, she lost her roots, and there is where she stands today. But one thing went, and the second thing went, and gradually they lost their roots. They didn't maintain a relationship with Indonesia, Malaysia, with the ulama and the seniors, and this is where they are. And they are approximately a million people. Not a small population, approximately a million people, and how they lost. Rather, somehow the Tabligh Jamaat made inroads and they brought them to some realization at least. Right? Now, the reason for them straying away like that, what was it? Apparent reasons, Allah knows the real reason, but the apparent reason is one is that they broke away from the culture. Right? They broke away from their roots. That was Malaysia, Indonesia, they broke away from their roots. These are the apparent reasons that come to my mind. Right? They broke away from the language, they broke away from their roots. Right? Here what happened was, up to recently, we maintained the language. Right? We maintained our languages, And number two, we maintained a relationship with India and Pakistan. Kept on calling some ulama, Buzugan Adin, Akabir, and we kept on maintaining some ties with our relatives. Wherever you got some hagas and relatives within Tarkeswar or Khatur or Surat or wherever else, Kolvat, wherever. But you maintain some relationship, you call them, you send some gifts, they came, you went, there were some marriages, whatever else. So you maintain some relationship. But in the maintaining of the relationship, you kept your culture. Right? And in the maintaining of the culture, your religion, your deen also was preserved. But now you broke away, then what happens? Then you are lost. Who do you belong to? You got no sense of belonging. Like in this day, you know, it's a point for you to just reflect. Just reflect. I'm showing now a little bit of history, what's going on, right? Up till the apartheid, right, this Afrikaner was a very strong nation. It's a very strong nation. But now if you go and see them and go and check them, what's going on, they are a totally lost nation. Because up till the time, they were ruling, right? So they had some power, they had some authorities, whatever they had. Right? Now, they don't belong to Holland and Dutch, and they don't belong to South Africa. So where are they now? They are in suspense. So they don't have a sense of belonging. There's a very high level of insecurity in them. There's no sense of belonging. Right? They don't belong to that side, they don't belong to this side. So where are they? In between. So the sense of belonging brings you security, it brings you strength, it brings you might, and it guards you against feeling inferior about yourself. We attribute that superiority and that intellect to that person who speaks English eloquently. Very well, he speaks it very well, using high words. But you must be a stupid. When I see sometimes a lot of people speak English in high words, but the subject that they are speaking is total nonsense. No brains they got. Absolutely they got no reasoning ability. But the words they are using, you know, like jawbreakers they are using. But then I see the subject matter, you know, the essence of what they are talking is absolutely rubbish. Absolute rubbish. You know, we were in that Azadville Jalsa some 3-4 years ago. Mahesh Patel Sahab was there. So Maulana was giving he wrote an essay. So the teacher, he wrote a comment. The teacher's comment was, it's a conglomeration of disjointed words. So I told, say, you know, in Gujarati it's so simple to say, I told that bejor vaat che. I ask you, is there any difference in that? In Gujarati you're saying so simply, I told that bejor vaat che. And now, a conglomeration of disjointed facts. You know, see how important it made it look. But man is stupid. I would say the teacher is in some other planet. He's not talking how he's supposed to be talking. They make it look very important, very serious, very important. Right? But when you check inside, you scratch the surface and you go and hunt inside, you see nothing. It's all kachura bharilache. You know, it's all nonsense inside. It's all rubbish. So what I'm getting at, you get back to your roots. What was the original style? What was the original? In the original style, there was a lot of taluk with deen. You know, in our childhood, we used to go to my grandfather's place in Amzinto. They used to call it Ganaskoti. So, we used to be doing trading with all these sugarcane workers at that time. At that time, all these blacks that were doing the sugarcanes, right? So the black clothing at that time, I'm not sure, what I saw in my childhood, 1960s, right? The black clothing, what was it? The black clothing was a lungi. Really. They used to call it, we used to be selling that in our shop, they used to call it an ubaya. Ubayi or something, I can't remember, ubaya, but that's what they used to be wearing. One sheet, and one sheet they would clothe they would cover the bottom, and they would have one shawl over. Really, the Sahaba style, bring you right to the Sahaba. That time we didn't understand what was going on. Then when you study the Sahaba Ikram's life, then these people had the similarity. So they had one clothing, one cloth covering the bottom, right? They used to call it an ubay. Used to be selling in the shop at the time. And one sheet that was covering the top. And they used to have something on the head like a turban. Pure, you can see pure Islam it was. Then they moved away and they moved on. Now they got no sense of belonging. What religion do they belong to? They got no sense of belonging. So the jahalat, and they broke their connections from their roots. So now they don't know where they belong to. Whether to Christianity, to Islam, where do they belong to, where they came from, they lost out. See, the sense of belonging, where you come from, you preserve all that. Your language, your folks, your people, where you belong to. You keep that, at least you know where you're coming from. And inshallah, in time, you can preserve yourself. But you broke away. So now, you don't know the language. Now, you got folks in India, for example. I asked you, can you practice Sila Rahmi? Sila Rahmi is for us. Yanquduna ma amarallahu bi ayyusala. Now you're breaking that relationship because you can't communicate. Now that's a faraz to maintain relationship. That's a faraz. Right? But now you don't have the language. Now do you have the heart to go there to your gaon and speak to the people, go and see what the conditions are like and go and help them out or keep some type of... Can you do it? You can't do it. Or these mullahs now they come in between, they speak Urdu and Gujarati and mixed up. At least they can get through. But now those that don't know Gujarati, don't know Urdu at all, can they maintain any relationship? No relationship at all. Absolutely no relationship. Anyway, we were talking about Aisha, you know, this incident here, right? And we branched off to this culture, language, all that. And I was showing you where it's driving you. That you lose out completely, you don't know where you belong to. The importance that Aisha reprimanded this nephew for using the inappropriate word. But she reprimanded, corrected him. So the importance of bringing back our languages. When we were small, so for a non-Muslim, you will say uncle and aunt. You know, hey, that uncle is coming. But for a Muslim, you will say that mota, that chacha. We'll use that type of word. Now uncle for everybody. Everybody's uncle, everybody's auntie. How she became your auntie, you don't know. How she became uncle, you don't know. Nobody knows. But everybody's auntie, everybody's uncle. You know. For namaz, we would say namaz, right? Namaz or salat. Now the word that is being used is prayer. And I remember clearly, you know, we used to go to this reunion school, right? And they had a temple attached to the school. Right? Sometimes, what would happen is, if they had a prayer the previous night, the tabaruks, they would give it to the school children. Our home ladies would say, you don't eat anything of that. If they're puja food, don't eat anything of it. Others would mind, would send it, but we wouldn't take that. But I remember that prayers was for these Hindu prayers. So we don't do prayers, we do namaz. So we were distinct, we were clear, we were away from them. Now they mixed it up, no language you got. You got no language. So at the first level, at least, those words that you signify and you identify with Islam, you must use that words. Say zakat, don't say charity. You say namaz or salat, don't say prayers. Don't say I'm going for the pilgrimage, no, I'm going for hajj. What is hajj? Then you explain to the person what is hajj. Don't say it's like a pilgrimage. Because when they talk of a pilgrimage, then it is one Buddha or something, there's one shrine there, and they're going to visit one shrine. So that's not our concept of hajj. Hajj is something else, totally different. So you tell him what it is all about. So in your language, in your words, you must be distinct. Alim Yasab Rahmatullahi, he is a scholar in history, Islamic history. He's a great scholar, very great authority. The Arabs, everybody hold him. He's making a comparison between English and Urdu. And he says, you see, in Urdu, there's so much of respect and there's so much of humility, you know, so much of respect and humility. Like in Urdu, if someone asks you, "Tumara kya naam? What's your name?" Now, in the eloquent style, it is the answer will be given. They'll say, "Naam to Khuda ka hai, baki bande ko Ibrahim kehte hai." Name is Allah Taala's. In other words, the name that is worthy of praise and honor is Allah Taala's name. But this servant, he is known as this. Do you see the humility? And in English, right, if someone asks you, what's your name? I am Mr. Dr. Suleiman. Now, I ask you, is there any respect? Is there any humility here? There is no humility here. Here there is humility. It's teaching you, through and through, it's teaching you humility. Then you discover, oh, this person is a doctor. He's like, but he, then when he introduced himself to me, I thought he was one of us. But now see, look at the humility of the person. Naam to khuda ka hai, baaki bande ko is tarah se kehte hai. So there is humility in this. There is respect in this. You address a child differently. You address an elder differently. Here, both you say, you. Father, you coming? You can sit here. So, you speaking to your father also, and you speaking to your son, one and the same. There is no respect in this. So, this has to come in. Somehow or the other, you have to make a breakthrough and get it in. In the 1960s, there was one Memon Chacha from Nairobi. Some Ishaq, that was his name. But he joined the Jamaat at that time. Very wealthy, very, very wealthy he was. In the 1960s, he had about 12, 15 top cars, you know, parked outside. And his clothes used to go to Paris just for the dry cleaning. He was so, so wealthy he was. But he joined the Jamaat, right? Well, Umar Panipuri used to speak about him. And after he joined the Jamaat, then we saw two things in him. That in his own home, he started Arabic. He was Memon speaking, but he brought in Arabic in his language. At that advanced age, 40, 50, and he brought that. Right? He brought that Arabic language. Number two, Umar Sahib used to say, that he used to do things but very discreetly. You won't know that. So discreet he used to be, that he will do his tahajjud, and he will end up at about, say for example, tahajjud ends now at about 25 past 5, right? So he will end up at about 4 o'clock, and he's going to sleep. In the meanwhile, at 4 o'clock, everybody else is getting up. But he's done his thing and he's finished. So nobody would know that he got up for tahajjud, he did so much. They will say, oh, hey, this person is just one of those people that are wasting their time. But when this deen comes in, you know, this right thinking, this right culture, this right behavior, right ways come in, then right values come in to that person. He begins to think right, he begins to do things right, he'll do for his own people. Right? His own people now, you got in the gam, you got here, you're doing for them. Otherwise you're doing for the whole world, but your own people, you don't know them, and by accident sometime you're traveling, by who are you? Oh, I'm so and so. Who are you? Hey, we are first cousins. He doesn't even know his first cousin. You know, you become so estranged to each other that, I mean, there must be some reason. In Tirmidhi Sharif, there's a hadith which says, تَعَلَّمُوا مِنَ الْأَنْصَابِ مَا تَسِنُونَ بِهِ أَرْحَامُكُمْ. That learn your lineage. You learn your lineage, and through your lineage, you can maintain family ties. Now, you don't know your lineage. Can you maintain? I ask you, anybody sitting here, does he know his family is above the fifth generation? Anybody? Anybody that knows his family is above the fifth generation? Nobody knows. When this verse was revealed, تَنْتَنَالُ الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ, and Abu Talha radiallahu anhu offered his most priceless bagh, that was Bayruha, he offered it to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. I want to give it in the path of Allah Ta'ala. So Rasulullah suggested to him, I feel you should give it to your family people. So he gave it to two sahabis. One was Hassan ibn Sabit, and one was Ubay ibn Ka'b radiallahu anhu. And the one meets up with Abu Talha in the fifth generation, and the other one meets up with him in the sixth generation. Like we say, 45th kid cutting, isn't it? Won't we say that? But they preserved all that. Now, say for example, just look at this in retrospect, just turn these things around, right? If Abu Talha had forgotten his lineage, could he have maintained the relationship? I ask you. He could have maintained the relationship. Now in this culture that we are, right, this culture, this English culture, right, we'll know the lineage of all the animals. Gadera and Ghora, we'll know all about their lineage. This one came from this one, and that one came from that one. But your own human race, you don't know your roots. But the animals, though, you preserve them, and you lost. Anyway, we're getting to this this incident of Hazrat Aisha radiallahu anha. We branched off into this whole culture, this whole cultural story. Yeah? Generally, my ustad used to say that, you see, that the generation that was above you, generally, he won't say 100%, but generally, their dini spirit is stronger. Maybe some of the practices, they were weak. But if you look at the dini spirit, then they were stronger. Then the generation was above, that was above them, they also, their dini, the allegiance to deen, and the holding on to deen was firmer and stronger, and so forth and so on. So that means we have to hold on to these people here for our own stability and strength. And the moment we cut off from them, you cut off. You finish, you lost. You cut off from your elders, you cut off, then you cut off completely. So we are talking about this incident here of Mawlana Rahim Ilahi Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. And we went on to this masla. Mawlana has Sahanpuri Sahib had bought that watch from Hazrat Mawlana Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. So let's end the story here. So whilst doing the whole deal, so Mawlana Thanvi Rahmatullah Ali said, "No, take this watch free of charge. I don't want to charge you. You my elder, how can I charge you?" He said, no. Now see the word that he used, "Yato husne talab huga." That I am asking you to sell this to me and you're giving it to me for free, then this will be like subtly requesting, you know. Asking, but in a very discreet way. One is to ask straightforward, "By, give me that watch." And one is to ask discreetly. Now that's called israf, that's also wrong. If this is wrong, then this is also wrong. And many a times we don't differentiate this. This discreet asking, we don't differentiate it, right? From asking. So it's like a very sophisticated way of asking. Now that's wrong as well. Hazrat Mawlana Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah Ali and Mawlana Sahanpuri Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, both were traveling once. So Mawlana Sahanpuri Sahib Rahmatullah Ali said to Mawlana Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah Ali that, you know, we are both invited to this so-and-so Nawab's place. Now, Nawab were the wealthy people at that time. And it was his way, that Nawab's way, that whenever he would have this high-level guest, then he would give them some gift, some cash, some gift he would give them, you know. So Mawlana Sahanpuri says, you know, this is his routine. That when you go to him, then he gives you an envelope, he gives you a gift. Now, is this israf? Because we know in our minds that he's going to give a gift. Does this amount to israf? So Mawlana says that, see, I don't know the answer, but because of your barakah now, that answer is coming in my mind. The answer that's coming in my mind is this, that say for example, if he doesn't give a gift, as it is his habit and his routine to give a gift, right? Say if he doesn't give a gift, will we have any type of complaint within our heart? Hey, this time he didn't give us, you know. Normally he gives, why he didn't give us? What happened now? Someone spied us. Someone spoke ill of us. Why is there a U-turn in his whole behavior towards us? So if there is a complaint in the heart, then this will be amounting to israf. But if there's no complaint, if he gives, it's fine. Doesn't give, also it's fine. It's not a problem. You don't feel any indifference, then you will say that this is not israf. So Mawlana says that it seems like Mawlana Sahanpuri Sahib Rahmatullah was very, very happy with that answer. That Mawlana Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullah, someone asked him, what's the meaning of israf? So he says, Jahan Thang, see, where am I going to get from? Is this person going to give me something? That person is going to give me something? Your mind is wandering. Now there's two different situations. One is you have a relationship with someone, right? And then you ask him for something, but you have a relationship with him. So there is no problem in that. Like for example, you go to your mother's place, right? And you say, "Ma, hey, I'm longing for some samosas and some tea and some ice cream," right? So you will not say, "No, the israf." No, you can't be sitting in the corner in your house, your mother's house, say, "Hey, I'm going to ask anything that is going to be israf." Mother will get worried, you know who take you, but what's happened to this person now? He's sitting like so dull here. Yeah? You have a relationship, so you say, all right, I want this. So when you have a relationship, and the relationship is at that level, where they feel actually happy. They actually feel happy that you ask for something. So there's no wrong in that. Right? Like Nabi Sallam had gone into the bagh of that Ansari Sahaba. Right? And that Ansari Sahabi had offered some meals and all that. Fresh dates, and he roasted one lamb or something, and he presented it to them, right? So he felt, hey, I cashed in very well. Hey, Nabi Sallam came in, Abu Bakr came in, Umar came in, what else I want? He felt I cashed in very well. See? So it was like, he didn't make his day, but he made his life. So he'll remember it for the rest of his life. He got it stuck in his memory that this is what happened to me. So if the relationship is like that, then there's no problem. But we don't take advantage over this principle and say, no, my relationship is with him like this, so I will continue like this. No. That's, you need to ask yourself, ask your conscience, okay, do you have that level of relationship? Or you're just making up something? So if there is a relationship in place, and then you ask, it's all right. 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 Anyway, this whole watch story is carrying on. And once Anpuri Sabran was saying, see, if I'm going to ask, then this is Husna Talab, it's like Ishraf. So then a price was made and he bought that thing. Anyway, this person felt uncomfortable. The actual gifter, he felt uncomfortable. And he actually felt uncomfortable. So Mona asked, can you just return the watch to me? So Mona Sahanpuri says, but there was no, you didn't take an option. You didn't take an option to sell or to buy. You know, if there was an option to sell or to buy, then you could have cancelled the sale. But when there wasn't an option in place, then how can you cancel the sale? So he says, all right, doesn't make ikala, cancel the sale. So Mawla says, the cancellation comes with both consenting, and I don't consent. So one is, he said option, and then he says consent. What time is he saying? To who? Mawla Sahanpuri. So he said, so there wasn't a consent in place, there wasn't an option in place. So he says, you know what, Hazrat, well, now he tried everything. He exhausted all his avenues. So when he exhausted all the avenues, now he's tried the friendly way. He said, Hazrat, now, you know, I'm your friend. And friends and all, we can't be so dogmatic, you know. So anyway, so Mawla Sahanpuri says, you know, I would have cancelled the sale, but actually, this watch I have bought is not for me. A certain friend asked me to buy this watch for him. So I bought it for him. When I bought it for him, then I am his wakil. I am his representative. Right? So I only did the buying as his representative. Right? When I've done the buying as his representative, then my rights all end up at the point where I've given this bought article to the person that has purchased it. He's the purchaser, I'm the man in between. When I'm the man in between, then I can't do anything. I can't make any alteration to this. I have to give it to him. Then if he wants, then he can make some alteration, he can give it back. But I can't make an alteration. I'm just the man in between. Right? Like, you know, you want a motor car, right? So I'm the dealership. So I sourced the car out, I got it by me. I bought it for you, right? And I need to deliver it to you. When I need to deliver it to you, someone comes in between and says, no, sell me this car. I can't, but I bought it for this person specifically. So it's his car, I'm just the man in between. I have to pass it on to him. He wants that, he can sell it to you. That's between you and him. But I can't do the cancellation here. Anyway, all that ended. Then the next day, on some other occasion, Mawla Sahanpuri Sahib Rahmatullah took the watch and gave it back to Mawla Thani Rahmatullah. So I said, but you said now you can't make a cancellation, there's no option in this, and then you bought it, you was a representative of this person here, so how can you act without his consent? So he said, Mawla said, it's true what I said, that there wasn't an option, you can't cancel this, and I was a rep in between, right? But my relationship with that person is such that if I do cancel the sale, I cancel the sale, he will not take any exception. He will not take any exception. So my relationship with that person is that, is like that, that he won't mind. So because my relationship is at that level that he won't mind, then it's permissible for me to cancel the sale. But I look at this discussion where so many ilmi things come out. So many aspects of ilm come out from their one transaction, one small little watch, but so many things to watch in. So these people discussions, when the discussions took place, that it revolved around knowledge. And when it revolved around knowledge, that it made the knowledge in the kitabs, it refreshened all that knowledge. So you know khiyar al-shart, we know iqala, and we know what is wakil and muwakil, and the tasarruf of the muwakil, etc., whatever. So all this become quite fresh in our minds. Otherwise, what happens, that those words just remain in our minds till the time you have to write that exam in that kitab. And once that exam is written, finished class, it's over now. No more, I don't have a problem now. Now that ilm remains fresh in us. Allah Ta'ala tawfiq nasib.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Today we'll discuss some of the adab and etiquettes of safar and going on a journey. That before embarking on any journey, that one should inform the family people or the elders at home of his intentions of embarking on a journey. And then he should also inform them of his destination and the duration of the stay and when he is expected to return. Then if it is going to be a long journey and he will be away from home, then he should make adequate arrangements for the duration of time that he will be away. For those that at home, whether it is they would require some money or they would require food stuff, etc. So adequate arrangements should be made before he sets off on the journey. Then one should also choose someone as a companion or a few people to join him on the journey. It is unadvisable for a person to go on a long journey all alone. Rather, he should choose some company, and there should also be a pious person that would join him. Then before departing, more especially if it is a long journey, then a person should read two rakats of nafil namaz, asking Allah Ta'ala's protection and ease, etc. on the journey. Then when commencing the journey, then one should recite the masnoon du'as. For example, Subhanalladhi sakhara lana hadha, the whole ayat, and the other du'as that appear in the hadith. Then whilst on the journey, and a person is accompanied by others, then one shouldn't be very firm and rigid, but rather one should be light-hearted, jovial, and he should be open with others so that it doesn't make the journey difficult for them as well. Then if a person would require some provisions for the journey, then all necessary arrangements should be made. For example, he should take the good amount of money that he would require. If food is required on the journey, then that should also be taken. Then before embarking on the journey, if one is going to be the driver himself, then he should know the route. Shouldn't be that he sets off on the journey and thereafter he gets lost. But from beforehand he should know the route that he would be taking. And whilst travelling, then instead of engaging in futile talk, it will be better that a person engages in some zikr or in tilawat, or instead of listening to some nazam, etc., then a person should engage in these activities. And then if it is public transport, then one should avoid sitting next to any female, but rather he should look for a spot where he would be able to sit next to a male. Then also, especially on an aeroplane, then a person should avoid getting into any conversation with the air hostesses, etc. If there is a need, then very brief, but to the point, a person should just ask them for whatever he requires, and that's all. Then, whilst on journey, many people tend to miss their namaz, so one should be punctual on his salah as well. But here as well, a person should be short in his salah, not causing taklif to the other satis. And also, if for example, the space where he's going to be performing the salah is very confined, then one shouldn't take up the space for a very long time and block and obstruct the traffic or the flow of people. But for example, a person should read more towards the side so that people won't be inconvenienced by him performing namaz. Then once a person intends to return, then if you intend to return late at night, then don't return unexpectedly, but rather inform the household people at what time you would be returning so that they won't be frightened by your unexpected return. And upon reaching your destination, then the sunnah dua to recite is A'ibun ta'ibun abiduna li rabbina hamidun.
One point that people generally neglect. See, when traveling, especially on a plane or something, then there will be two types of conveniences. One is a seat, your personal seat, and one is something that is commonly used, like how you find a toilet, right? It's a common use. So, according to the teaching of the hadith, whatever is in common use, you have to be considerate in two respects. One is this, that you don't want to take too much of time in that, because it's of common use. There may be a whole line that now you're taking 10 minutes to make a miswak inside a toilet. Now, is that fair? Someone is hard up now, and you doing a miswak, and it's going to be hard for the next person. Obviously, he can't complain. Who must he complain to? So he must be considered in that respect, that you take minimum time in the toilet, so that it's some service or it's some convenience that is general. You know, it's common for everybody, not only for you. Now, this can apply to your own home as well, where it's a common thing. When it's a common thing, then you must be very particular about that. Use it briefly. Now, at home now, you're sitting in the toilet and reading the paper. Like, it's a habit of some people now. You're sitting now, there's only one toilet, two toilets, and three people want to get into the toilet, read namaz and all that. How are they going to do it? You cause problem, isn't it? Now, some people, they don't read paper, or they can't. Yeah. So, that's not a right habit. That habit must be discontinued. It's a common, you know, when that use, it's of common usage, then you must be very considerate about the next person. The second thing is this, that you leave the place better than you found it. You know, if you found it crisp, clean, whatever else, then you use the place and leave it better than what you found it. Now, these are all Islamic teachings. It's not Western teachings, it's not European teachings, it's our teachings. And the teachings of Islam are such, if anybody uses them, then he will enjoy respect. If a non-Muslim uses it, he'll enjoy respect. If a Muslim uses it, he will enjoy respect. Right? So it's hamari ghar ki baat hai. It's our own home. Think of our own home. Why should we now break away from this? The same now, we talk about namaz. Reading namaz there. Now, we won't say now fajr, and today is a Friday, so Islam says that, and halatal al-insan, inu min ad-dar. Are you blocking the whole traffic there? And you don't read your sunnats and all that there. Because it's a heavy traffic area. It's a heavy traffic area, now you're doing your sunnats. Everybody's going to be cursing the namaz. And say, what type of religion is this? They're so inconsiderate. But you are brief. You just did 1-2 minutes. Nobody minds. Before they know anything, and you finished. And you'll be a little bit considerate, right? It's in the plane. They have a time where they are serving. So you don't go and jam them up at the time of serving. They need to serve now, so you don't jam them up at that time. See, now they finish serve more or less, then you go and read your namaz. So they comfortable, you comfortable. Allah Ta'ala Tawfiq.